Welcome to Hoop du Jour with me, Peter Vesey, presented by the National Basketball Retired Players Association.
All right, so Peter Vesey here, Hoop du Jour, another segment with Dominique Wilkins, who one of my all-time favorite people to be around. Unfortunately, I wasn't around him that much throughout his career, but I didn't cover the Hawks, but I remember, I remember traveling with you guys on the West Coast when Mike Fratello was the coach, and he allowed me to work out with your team on the coast. I forget where we were and stuff, and I ran full court with you guys. I mean, unbelievable stuff that you could do in those days. Nothing like that would happen today.
Man, I remember that, those days. I mean, you know what, though? I think the media and the team had a much closer relationship, you know, between player and media. So it was a little different then. You know, it's like, in a sense, it was a family. Sometimes a family you love, and sometimes you hated them, you know, but it was still a kind of a family environment. So, you know, when I look back the history of, you know, our friendship, you know, and when I first met you, you know, I was like, this guy, Peter Vesey, is no joke. he don't play, man. He said, hey, if you're not playing, he's going to let you know. And so I think that was kind of the start of really understanding what the media was about and how you guys viewed a lot of players. But fortunately for me, we were able to build a friendship over those years.
And you know what happened with a lot of guys? I mean, there weren't too many assholes in the league. You know, if they were, they kind of got weeded out for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But with the way the coaches kind of handled everything too, they let you in the locker room, you know. I mean, on that trip again, Fratello letting me play. Carr was on your team. What's his first name?
Antoine
Carr. So I'm guarding him. What is he, 6'8"?
6'9".
6'9", about
250.
And he's elbowing me in the post. What the? I said, what are you doing? I said, this is why you foul out all the time. What are you hitting me for?
Well, you know, if you were brave enough to get out there, you know, it was like, okay, you got to suffer the consequences. If you got sneakers on, you're going to pay for it. But again, that was just the comfort level that we had, with media. And I tell you, you were the only media person that ever done anything like that with our team, you know, with probably anything. Yeah. And so, it shows you how, you know, loose and how gracious the teams were, the managements were in those days. Because first of all, a lot of the writers you tried to build a relationship with, and as long as you showed respect to those writers, man, a lot of times they took care of you. But if you didn't, you know.
Right. Well, that's not the way it should have worked.
You know? Man, right.
But
that's the way it was.
Unfortunately, yeah.
That's the way it was.
Yeah.
But again, you know, I've never had really tough relationships with the media because I've always made myself accessible and talk with me, so it was not a big deal for me.
So the only time that Dominique Wilkins and I ever sat down for dinner was in 2018. I'm out in Phoenix. The Hawks come through to play the Suns, and we went out to eat after the game. And before you even sat down at the table, you weren't even seated yet. Do you remember what you told me? No. You were angry. You said, you know, I'm still pissed off about not being gone.
Yeah, 50 Greatest was one of the things.
That was one of them, right?
That was one of them. And the other thing I think we talked about, I'm trying to remember.
Okay,
you know, as we get older, we forget things.
Yeah, you know? I'm going to help you. So you said, yeah, I'm angry I didn't make the top 50. And I said, yeah, and I think I told you, I know you were 51. I found that out.
Mm-hmm.
Which probably didn't make you feel any better.
No, it didn't. It made me feel worse.
And the other things, you know, you weren't inducted into the Hall of Fame on the first ballot.
You know, right? Did I tell you a story of what happened with that?
No.
Well,
that's what we're here for.
I led all votes, coaches and players at that time. And I remember getting a call from the Hall of Fame. They said, we've never made a call like this before. And they decided to do all coaches. No players went in that year. And I'm like, but I let all votes.
That's true.
But I was like, okay.
No, you weren't happy.
And so, no, I wasn't happy about that. But, you know, they did say, hey, there's no way you will be left off next year. And that's the year Barkley, myself, and Joe Dumars went in together. But, man, I thought, wow. You know, how can it happen? But, you know, the league was really upset about it. You know, Stern at the time, like, how can you leave one of the greatest players in the history of our sport, and he's not going first ballot. So.
And now they're putting in people who don't even deserve. But that's another thing altogether. But you forgot one thing, and I've thought about it since that day. You should have been angry about that. You weren't on that dream team. Everybody talks about Isaiah not being on the dream team. So, okay, but there's a lot of stuff that going into that, a lot of politics and stuff. But you should have made that.
You know, yeah, it should have been selected. But I think, too, what really kind of hindered that, too, is that I think I tore my Achilles tendon during that time.
When 91? When
90, year? Yeah, with a 91. Yeah.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
So you hadn't come back yet?
No, I hadn't come back yet.
All right, well. There's a reason, but, okay.
That, you know, the fact that should have been mentioned, that's the thing that, you know, now when I look back, I'm like, okay. I said, well, you know, I was injured, so.
Okay, all right. That. All right, my bad on that. Dominique, I've never asked you this. I've read different versions of it. When you were drafted by Utah and then traded to the Hawks, were you going to hold out? Were you going to? Did you want to become a Laker? Did you not want to play for Utah? What was the deal?
Actually, when I came out of, before I came out of college, they said if I come out early, especially in my junior year, that I would be the number one pick to the Lakers. But I think at that time, Mitch Kupchak got hurt, so they wanted a forward who could play both forwards, a power forward and a small forward. And James Worthy being a 6'9", a half, 6'10", was a perfect fit at that time. So I knew if I didn't go first, that I would go third. And so going to Utah, I was not happy about that at that time. So I don't know how long after that, and I got traded to Atlanta. And that was like I died and went to heaven.
Was there any talk about you joining Worthy in?
Oh, yeah.
By the way, you would have been perfect for that team.
They tried to get us both.
Right. That's what I
Man, you can't even imagine that team. Me and James Worthy or, you know, playing alongside each other with Magic and Kareem.
Right.
How many championships would that team do?
Right. Did it come close? What happened?
Well, I heard it was close at times, but teams felt like they had to give up too much to get me there with Worthy. So, you know, so both ways they had to give up some.
So the story I heard from Atlanta, from Stan Kasten, who was in charge at the time, was when he tried to make the deal, when he did make the deal for you, but leading up to it, he said they had a board meeting, and Ted Turner was at the board meeting, and he asked what would it take to get, you know, he was told what it would take to get you. I mean, it was $1 million cash because Sam Battistone, the owner, was, you know, had no money. And the Turner's guys, his accountants and stuff, we cannot afford this. We can't afford too much money. And Turner said, do it anyway.
Yeah, you know, and you're absolutely right. And to add to that, also, who was a part of that was Hank Aaron. And Mike Aaron's senior, who was at that time the president of the Hawks along with Ted Turner. And Ted basically, and actually Hank Aaron said to Ted, you need to get this guy by any means necessary. Because he's seen me play a lot in college there at the University of Georgia. So with that kind of collaboration with those guys, it's like, yeah, let's do it. Ultimately, it was Ted's decision. He said, yeah, go ahead and do it. And I remember Ted said to me, he said, man, I gave up two players and $1 million to get you. He said, I didn't pay that much for my wife.
even when he divorced her? that was John Drew.
Classic Ted, man.
John Drew and Freeman Williams.
John Drew and Freeman Williams and $1 million. You know, two proven players at that time.
Oh, yeah. I think John was an all-star.
Yeah, he was
an
all-star.
But a little trouble at the time. A lot of trouble at the time.
Yeah, he was.
With drugs.
He was going through some things.
Yeah.
You know, I saw John Drew, too. Many, many, many years later, he lives in Houston.
And I hear driving a cab.
I heard this guy hollering my name.
Oh,
I'm like,
my
who
God.
Is that? And I look down the street. I'm looking at this guy, and it's John Drew. And, you know, he came up, gave him a hug, and he looked great. And he said, you know something, Nick? This is the only time in my life I ever had this much peace driving a cab. And sometimes people find different things in life that bring them peace and keep them, you know, leveled out and keep their head straight. And for him, that was it.
Was he in the cab when you saw him?
Yeah, he was in the cab and he got out.
Oh, my God.
I could not believe it.
Man. You got photos?
You know, I should have. I didn't get them. But, man, I was really happy and proud of him, and, you know, how he changed his life and turned his life around.
I thought about going to Houston to try to find him, you know, not recently. Mm-hmm. Well, I knew he was driving the cab down, and it would have been a great story. And it still would be a great story if he's okay.
Yeah, he's a wonderful guy. He's doing great. He's really mellowed out, you know.
Right.
Just a good guy. He's just a good guy. I always thought, even when I was in college, I used to come because he used to live right next door to my mother when I was at University of Georgia. So I knew John Drew when I was in college. So I knew what kind of person he was. You know, he just was going through a lot of personal stuff, you know, with the drugs and all these different things. But, you know, the fact that, you know, he can find his way in something that no one would ever imagine.
Yeah,
to find his piece.
It's a tremendous story. I remember I had a line on him. He's probably still angry about it. But, you know, he didn't play much defense. I said, yeah, but he gets back fast on offense.
Yeah. Yes, he did. But I'm going to tell you something. One of the hardest guys I ever had to guard was John Drew.
Why?
He was so crafty, so skilled, and so strong. He found ways to make you foul. So you always had to keep your hands up. You know, you couldn't reach with him.
Hmm.
Or if he was going to send him to the free throw line. He was, man, a crafty, KZ guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the hell out of watching him play. I remember another instance when you lost the dunk contest to Michael at an all-star game.
Mm-hmm.
And we happened to run into each other at the airport that day. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that.
You remember?
Going back 30-something.
Yeah, whatever year it was. Yeah. You hadn't won one yet, and you got robbed. There's no question.
Actually,
was it in Chicago?
I won one before that.
You had won one
in Indianapolis. I think it was my second year in the league. Yeah.
All right. Well, I don't remember that part of it, so we're going to ignore the truth. But I remember saying to you at the airport, you were very upset, and I told you at the time. I said, you know, it's going to come back. You're going to get that. I think you got the next one.
Yes. You know what? At that time, because we were competitors.
Right.
Jordan and I were competitors. And so, yeah, I wanted to win. But, you know, I love competing against Mike. But, you know, as years went on, I realized how special that dunk contest was. And it wasn't about winning and losing. It's what we did as you know, competitors that they could talk about this dunk contest to this very day. You're talking about 33, 34 years later.
Right.
And they're still talking about it. So I didn't realize the history he and I was making. And now, not being competitors, we appreciate how we lifted each other to that next level.
Have you talked about that?
You know, we never talked about it. It's kind of an unspoken thing between he and I. Mm-hmm. But one thing he had said recently, he said, man, you know, Nick, you won. And I said, well, how you doing, Mike?
So give me the trophy.
Yeah, but you know, we did a little skit where we kind of referred to that, but he and I, we just love playing against one another. It's never been any animosity. It's never been any type of hate between us.
Right.
It was just, we were just fierce competitors. And that's what it was about with us.
All right, so, you know, you talk glowingly about, you know, competing against Michael, but the guy which really grabbed me when we had dinner that night was the way you talk about Larry Bird. You have such profound respect for him. So it would take your time and explain how that all. I know you've done it before with people. I've seen it, but that night at the table, you really grabbed me with stuff.
Larry
you said.
Was a unique talent, a unique person when it comes to competing in the sport. I never met anyone quite like him, because Larry wasn't a super athletic guy. And I ask kids all the time, if you had to choose between a great basketball player or a great athlete, which would you choose? And most young kids would say great athlete. But that's your first mistake. But the great athlete gonna give you a lot of oohs and ahs. A great basketball player gonna beat you every night. That's who Larry Bird was. A great basketball player that he wanted to take your heart. A lot like Michael and Magic and people like, they wanted to take your heart.
Did you want to take?
And I was the same.
Yeah, okay.
I was the same.
Okay.
You know, I
same
was that
category.
Same mentality. You know, I'm coming at you 100 miles an hour.
Right.
That's just the way I played. So I didn't really care who you were. But the Bird and Wilkins matchups, man, was legendary. Because I remember in that game 7, and we should have won a game 6.
What year was that?
I want to say 87 or something like that. I think
yeah.
It was.
So this was the semifinals.
Semifinals, the seventh game.
Yeah.
But we should have won in six. We blew our opportunity. And Bird, I remember making a prediction. He said, Atlanta blew the opportunity of guaranteeing a win in Boston. And this is headlines. We had to see it in the paper. So I put that article in our locker room in Boston. And I remember coming out of the locker room and said, we're going to win this bleep, bleep game. If you ain't ready to fight, you ain't ready to go to war, don't come out. So whoever guarded me tonight going to have a long night. Well, unfortunately, Larry Bird was saying the same thing to his team. So it's set up for the greatest shootout.
Absolutely.
In seventh game history, you know. And I remember, I was going pretty good most of the night. I was pretty hot. And Bird had 12 points going into the fourth quarter. That's all. And I remember we running down the court, and Kevin Willis reached across me and put his finger, like, close to Bird's chest. He said, don't let this so-and-so score anymore tonight. And I looked at Kevin,
oh,
and I'm
Kevin,
like,
shut up, yeah.
What are you doing? And his eyes got so big. And he had 22 or something like 24 in that fourth quarter. It was unreal. He ended up, but put it this way, he ended up with 34.
And you had 40?
And I had 46. And so he had that great shootout in that fourth quarter. It came down to who was going to make the last shot. And so he had two great players trying to match each other's will, trying to will our team to a win. And I was so hot in that game when I got the missed shot on the rebound. I come to half court. I'm ready to let it fly to try to win the game. And Danny Ainge tackles me before I had a chance to shoot the half because hit that shot.
They had a foul to give.
And so, no, it wasn't a foul to give. No. They sent me to the free throw line.
They just sent you the free throw.
Yeah. Because I think we were down three. We were down three.
So you didn't want a three-pointer.
So they didn't want that three-pointer. And so, man. So, yeah, Larry Bird was competitive off the charts.
And you told me that he never spoke to you until.
We never shook hands.
Yep, no.
We never shook hands. We never spoke our whole career.
Ever.
And so we retired.
Until you retired.
Well, we like to talk about it because we love the story. So Larry and I have a really cool friendship, relationship that, you know, we see each other, man. We always give each other respect and have, you know, short conversations. Because, you know, Larry don't talk a lot. But the respect that he showed me. And I remember after that seventh game, he said to me, he said, man, you gave us everything we wanted. He said, we both deserve to win this game. He said, unfortunately.
So he did say something.
Yeah, and he said, unfortunately, one of us got it gone. I think that's the biggest respect I've ever gotten from an iconic player, especially in a loss like that.
Right.
Because of the way we battled in that series.
Right.
You know.
I remember writing about teams. It's a shame somebody had to win, but this is a little
different. It was a man. I remember it felt like 110 degrees in that Boston Garden. Electricity in that building was off the charts. So that set up. I knew at the beginning my palms were sweating before the game. I knew I was going to have a big night. I just knew it.
How big of a night? Nervous, right?
Oh, I was so nervous.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I promise you, he felt that way too, that he was going to have a big night.
Right.
And he did.
So you also told me about a teammate, a Hawks player, who had some negative stuff to say about Smith on your team, about Bird. And you told him.
I remember Josh was really the
Josh
he was a young guy.
Right.
And he said, we showed him a tape of me and showed him a tape of Larry Bird. And he said to one of the coaches, man, Larry Bird would never score against me. I said, young fella, come here. Don't ever say that outside this room. I said, let me tell you how big he was, how great he was. I said, I was one of the greatest athletes ever played in this game. He had 60 against me. I said, guys foul out trying to guard him. I said, you know, I've had big games against him, 40s and 50s and stuff like that. But when you playing against a guy who can give you the same 40, 50, and 60 on any given night, you can't stop him by yourself. I said, don't ever say that outside this room. And so he got it. But he was a young kid then.
Right. Well, speaking about young kids, another thing that really I really loved that night when we spoke was you talking about your kids.
Yeah.
Can you tell the audience about your children?
Well,
and how you've been.
I have six grandkids, one great granddaughter. So I got some grands. But, you know, I'm proud of all my kids. You know, the kids are a blessing in life, a blessing in my life.
You told me your boy was getting to be a really good player.
Yeah, well, my oldest son played at University of Virginia. His last year was Defensive Player of the Year in the ACC. Now he's an assistant coach over at Virginia now. So he's
what's his name?
Isaiah Wilkins.
Okay.
And then my youngest son, he's 15, 6'9".
Yeah.
And he can play.
Oh, we're going to be hearing about
him. Oh, yeah.
What's his name?
Jacob Dominique Wilkins. He can play.
Was he Dominique, the middle name Dominique, before you knew how good he was?
I couldn't give him a whole name because my sister took my whole name and gave it to my nephew. So he's not a junior. He's a junior, but I don't call him junior.
That's funny. Yeah. And what about your daughter?
We have a special needs daughter, right. Spinal bifida, who's, of course, loved my life. And she's been through a lot. She's been through 18 surgeries. And she's a warrior, man. And to be through the things that she's been through.
And what's her
father?
What's her name?
Jolie Taylor.
Jolie Taylor. Mm-hmm. Okay. Tell us about Jolie.
Yeah. And again, she had spinal bifida at birth.
Yeah.
And so she had serial casting. I mean, she's had multiple surgeries, bone graft, all types of things. But, and to this day, she's a very independent woman, little girl.
And how old is she?
14.
14.
So she's, she's one of those kids that perseveres through adversity.
So she has your competitive spirit.
Very. She asked me, why can't she play basketball? Why can't she play? I said, you can't. So she did wheelchair basketball for a while nationally. And they were
really
ranked number 3 or 4 in the country. And then she said, I don't want to do this anymore.
Right.
She started modeling. I don't want to do this more. She started painting. So she does many different things. And I'm happy to see that.
And you see her often?
Yeah, I've raised my 2 youngest kids myself. So, yeah.
So is she still living with you?
Oh, yeah, no question. Oh, okay. She's not going anywhere.
Okay. All right. And neither is the father.
No. And as long as I'm walking, I'm going to always be there in her life to help her. Yeah, so it's a fun time now because, she's doing well.
I remember you telling me about her. I really wanted to hear about her upgrading, what's going on.
So she's doing good. She's doing good.
That's great, man. So congratulations on the top 75. Mm-hmm. I mean, what was your initial response when you were told? I think I let you know on Twitter.
You did.
I was going to let you. There's no way you weren't getting in this.
I was elated. Even though you one of the best, but to be recognized as one of the best, that's what blows you away. And it's kind of a surreal feeling that you go through. Even now, it's like, until I get on, out there on the court with all those guys, man, how special is that going to be?
Right.
I mean, there's one of the greatest players that ever played this game, top 75 players ever.
Right.
I mean, there's only a few in life ever get a chance to experience something like that.
Right.
So, yeah, and when you're in that position, it doesn't matter who's one or who's 75. You're all great.
Right.
So it doesn't matter.
Right. What's great is it's not done posthumously.
Right.
There's so many awards that are given to people after they die. Like, mm-hmm. really? Would have been much better when they were here.
Yeah. And, we've got a lot of people who's not here anymore.
Yes.
That's a part of that list. And we got to continue to remember those guys. And the most recent one is, Kobe Bryant, who I still think about a lot. Man, what a person, what a talent, what a human being he was.
Did you have a relationship with Kobe?
Yeah, I really did. And, Kobe and our relationship was, more personal, where we showed appreciation to one another. We talked from time to time whenever we saw each other. And he's always showed me respect, and I've always showed him respect. And it was a heartbreaking experience when, we heard the passing of him. So
right. He's
going to be missed, still missed.
Right. I was, I used to double date a little bit with his father and mother.
Mm-hmm.
When Joe played for mm-hmm. Philly. Mm-hmm. So I was always telling Kobe, I said, Kobe, I knew you before you were even born.
Yeah.
I said, I know you,
Yeah. But those are the good times and that you can cherish and remember. And those days, you'll never forget. And so to be a part of this list, man, it's everything.
Will you do anything special here? Will you try to take pictures with everybody? Will you try to get autographs of people? What will you do?
As many guys as I can. But I think we can do autograph sessions. We have posters and stuff with all the guys, stuff we autograph. But, those pictures are memorable.
Yeah.
And they're valuable, we'll be taking quite a few pictures with a lot of guys. It's a lot of guys that I'm close to, like Clyde Drexler and Michael and, Dr. J. And,
right.
And one of my closest friends that I definitely miss too is Moses Malone.
Right.
Guys like that,
Yeah.
You miss those guys.
Yeah, no question. Mm-hmm. And so many of them died young, like Moses.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, Dominique, I want to thank you for doing this. I really enjoy being in your company.
Thank you, man.
And congratulations again.
Always a pleasure, man. Yeah. Always, man.
Yes.
Thank you for listening to Hoop du Jour with me, Peter Vesey, presented by the National Basketball Retired Players Association. You can listen to all Hoop du Jour interviews by searching Legends Studios, wherever you get your podcasts.